welcome to this latest episode of Money Control Macro. Today on, we have with us Tanvi Gupta Jain, who's the India Chief Economist at Investment Bank UBS. Tanvi, welcome to Money Control Macro.
Thank you.
Tanvi, we are speaking at what is a rather unprecedented and in some ways rather horrifying times for the country. Now, the focus obviously be it the government or be it the private sector or the citizens themselves. The focus is on the rising number of COVID cases and the availability of vaccines or hospital beds and oxygen. And we have discussed that and we will obviously come to the issue of vaccinations later on in this conversation. But first off, I wanted to start by asking you about the economic impact of the second wave. Now, a lot of projections, a lot of GDP projections for 2021-2022 were made before the second wave really hit us. And we had all the investment banks and all the analysts like yourself making their projections. We had the government making its projections. The economic survey projects real GDP to be around 11.4% growth in 2021-2022. Fiscal, and the budget itself sees a nominal GDP growth of 14.4% in the current fiscal year. And if you take a 4% deflator, then the real GDP growth would be around 10.4%. Although we do not have any national lockdown, although the political leadership has ruled out a national lockdown, there is obviously some hit on activity because of localized lockdown, especially in economic centers of Bombay and Delhi. So I believe you have also downgraded the GDP growth estimates for the current fiscal year compared to what you saw before. So what are your current estimates and what is the reasoning behind it?
So as you rightly pointed out, India is in the middle of a resurgence of COVID-19 cases. And with a daily case count, as of today, is even four times the September of 2020 peak. So if the efforts to get the virus under control are successful over the coming weeks, we think the recovery could gather steam from September quarter onwards. In fact, we revised our FY22 real GDP growth forecast downwards by 150 basis points to 10% year-on-year right now. So just to remind, consensus is still at 11%. The key assumption which has gone in our base case forecast is that the current mobility restriction to remain in place until end of May and assume activity is largely back to normal by end of June. You know, even as these measures are likely to dampen economic activity, we still think, you know, as you were pointing out, that there is no nationwide lockdown this time around, but a very much state-level mobility restrictions or a localized shutdown. What we are realizing is that, you know, the containment measures are quite targeted. However, it's where the problem is much more. For example, Maharashtra, Delhi, Gujarat, and now Karnataka, there the mobility restrictions have been much more strict than what you're seeing in other states. So the households and businesses, even, you know, in a scenario like that, have adjusted to the new normal.
But I wanted to ask you, since you are, as you said, the consensus is still around 11% and your latest estimates are at 10% GDP growth for the current year. Under what factors could you or would you downgrade those estimates even further? As in, what are the headwinds for even your current estimates? So what are the headwinds that you see in your projections?
Absolutely, Arup. But that's a very valid question because the pandemic is so uncertain that you can't really predict that we'll face out the way we are expecting in our base case. So what if things, you know, worse off from here? So in an alternate risk scenario, where disruptions could last longer, say India is not able to see a peak sometime in May, and we actually keep on seeing more and more states getting affected, and because of a lack of healthcare facility or the strain on the healthcare facility, you do see more and more states announcing strict curbs, which is now limited to, you know, maybe 4 to 5 states. And in an alternate scenario, we would expect disruptions to continue till July, August, and only by the month of September, you start seeing, you know, things normalizing.
In that alternative scenario, what sort of numbers would we be looking at when it comes to GDP projections?
So there's a risk that India's real GDP growth could actually slow by a much larger magnitude to 3 to 5% year on year in FY22 versus say 10% in our base case.
This is the worst case scenario, what you're putting in. This is this alternate. All right. Now, it's not just, Tanvi, as you know, it's not just GDP numbers. Other projections like GST collections, direct tax collections, privatization plans, and as a whole, the fiscal deficit projections of the central government could also be under threat depending on how long these economic disruptions continue. So the current estimates as for the government is 6.8% of GDP for the current fiscal year. So do you see any downside risks to that, to the fiscal and the tax revenue projections or even the privatization targets.
So if you look at the government's fiscal position and the way they were planning a consolidation, as you pointed out, at 6.8% GDP is their FY22 fiscal deficit target. In our case, assuming India is able to deliver a 10% real GDP growth, our nominal GDP growth is actually coming close to 14.5%, which is very similar to what the government budgeted. In fact, when the budget got released, we were actually talking about that there could be some upside risk on the tax revenue bit, mm-hmm. just because the government has assumed a very conservative, expectation on the nominal GDP growth, which was almost 100 basis points below consensus at that point in time. I think at this point in time, I will be much more watching very closely on the progress and divestment of privatization, because the government did budget US dollar $24 billion from this account. And it's a big function of how the capital markets are going to behave, whether or not and how successful the government is in able to achieve this target. Because when the government promised a big thrust on CapEx spending this year, there has to be enough revenue collections to be able to support that higher CapEx spending numbers. So we need to see how the deep impact of the second wave is going to be on the growth forecast, whether it's just a June quarter slowdown or you are going to see a lingering effect both in the June and the September quarter going forward.
Now we come to directly to the issue of vaccinations. We will come to, I believe the UBS has some projections on vaccinations. We will come to that. But first, there has been a lot of discussions. There's been a lot of debate around who bears the cost of vaccinating India's masses. Now, when the finance minister announced a vaccination budget of 35,000 crore, it was under the assumption that the center would procure the vaccines from Bharat Biotech, from Serum Institute, as well as from other vaccine makers as and when they come, and then distribute it to the states. But from May 1st, we are going to see a shift in that strategy. We are going to see states and private hospitals being able to directly procure those vaccines, those doses from the vaccine makers. And that has obviously led to a debate around who funds for this. Some state chief ministers have written to the prime minister and asked that center fund the entire cost of procurement for the states, because their reasoning obviously is that the state's own finances are as badly hit as the center because of COVID-19. And while some others, there are some independent analysts who are saying that if not the entire amount, then at least center should share some of the vaccination budget with the states. So where are you on this debate? Do you think the center should give some fiscal support to the states in terms of procuring vaccines? Because any procurement and then giving it to most of your population for free sort of does impact the state's own fiscal situation as well.
So I think it's a very valid question. So if you look at the budget, the center actually earmarks rupees 350 billion for vaccines. At that point in time, the clarity was that anyone above 45 plus age group will be given free vaccines from the central government's allocation, which is, as you rightly pointed out, the center is going to give those vaccines to the states and anyone above 45 can get it from free. Now, under the new regulation and as per the new, announcement, anyone above 18 years can get a vaccine. And many state governments are deciding whether there will be a cost to the vaccine charged to the citizens, or like Maharashtra announced, they're going to give a free vaccine even to the category of people in the age group of 18 to 45. So the sense which we are getting, looking at the revised price that the Serum Institute of India is now going to provide, say at 300 rupees to the states versus say 150 rupees to the center, and looking at the population in the 18-year age group, I think the overall cost, including everyone gets a vaccine, by this financial year, in our expectation, the cost is coming somewhere in the range of 600 billion rupees, out of which 350 billion seems to be provided already in the budget. So the balance 250 billion is a tricky question at this point in time.
This is for all the states.
Yes. Yes. So we have taken the price based on a two-dose vaccine and the price which is quoted by the Serum Institute of India. Right, so I guess the addition which is coming is around 250 billion. Then again, we need to see how much proportion of the people will be able to get a vaccine by this financial year end, depending again on the supply. So yeah, so 250 billion, whether it will, it's an extra expenditure which was not accounted for. So whether it will be a part of the state government's budget or the center is going to compensate in the form of a grant later on, we don't know yet. And but again, 250 billion will be roughly around 0.1% of GDP. So should be okay on a larger fiscal picture on the extra budget, if at all it is given for free to the citizens above 18 years of age.
But we don't know whether the center would give some grants or some support to the states. But do you think the center should?
Okay, so at this point in time, very difficult to know what the center is going to do. But 350 billion out of, say, 500 to 600 billion, that will be the cost that ideally should be given completely by the center. And, you know, the balance left, we need to see how the progress is also on the fiscal position of the center and the states going forward. So whether it's just a June quarter slowdown or is it a more meaningful slowdown, that's a big bearing on how the states and the center fiscal position is going to pan out. So I think very difficult at this point. We also have to look at the other aspect, that how many states are willing to provide it for free and how many states are willing to go and going to charge whatever is the nominal rate which the Serum Institute of India or the Bharat Biotech will be providing as a cost of providing the vaccine.
So far, I think, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, around 8 to 10 states have already announced that they would do it for free.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to ask you, this is regarding the issue of what you call what the Prime Minister himself has spoken about, cooperative federalism or fiscal federalism. Do you think this whole issue of who pays for the vaccine could become a sticking point when it comes to cooperative federalism? Because last year we also saw a flashpoint between the center and states regarding GST compensation. So do you think this whole issue of who pays for the vaccination could also become sort of a sticking point or a flashpoint when it comes to center-state relations?
So let me first give you some numbers on the vaccination and then I tell you about the center and the state relationship based on that. So the sense which we are getting and we are building in that the vaccine run rate in terms of the amount of doses provided per day can actually improve significantly from the month of August onwards as we do see ramp up in capacities available on the ground from Institute of India and Bharat Biotech. And now we obviously have the third vaccine, which is Sputnik, where the first supply we are expecting to see in May. But from, you know, over the next couple of months, as we ramp up the capacity, the supply availability of vaccines in India to go up significantly. We are expecting 64% of India's adult population to be able to get vaccination by end of December 2021. And if I look at in terms of total population, 43% of India's total population will be able to get a vaccine by December 2021. So this would place India in a reasonably comfortable position. Obviously, the top risk is virus mutation, which we get to know over a period of time. Now, the center and state relationship could evolve. And as you were pointing out about fiscal federalism. So again, we need to realize is that the states which are the worst impacted will be taking more efforts in, you know, we are already hearing that more and more states are directly talking to the vaccine manufacturer to procure supply in their respective states, because the onus has now left from the center to the states in the how you're able to, you know, procure the vaccine and is able to vaccinate bulk of the population. Like, for example, I'm the state of Maharashtra and they announced that they will try to ensure that majority of the population is able to get a vaccine by August. So definitely what you are going to see going forward is that which states are more effective in procuring the vaccines and how quick is the pace of vaccine deployment in that state. Because a lot of work happens at the state level machinery, even in terms of deploying vaccines to the larger population. So definitely from a center, the entire onus seems to be have shifted onto the states.
Now looking ahead, obviously, as you said, as the months roll on, by the time we reach probably December, a large part of the population would be vaccinated. And eventually, this crushing second wave is also expected to come down. Now, looking beyond that, like last year, there was the Atmanirbhar Bharat package from the central government. And there was also monetary policy support from the Reserve Bank of India. Do you think that this year also some sort of intervention, economic intervention or sector-specific intervention is required by the central government? Do you think that, and how do you also see monetary policy shaping out in the coming months?
So let me first start with the fiscal response, what we expect from the government. So we do realize that the government has a very stretched balance sheet from a pre-pandemic fiscal deficit of 7.8% of GDP. Our estimate is indicating that in FY21, the consolidated fiscal deficit was close to 11.8% of GDP. So in a scenario where we are again seeing second wave and downside risk to growth, I think the most important point for any kind of policy intervention will also be a function of how the duration of this second wave. Is it going to be a 3 month or a 6 month or more kind of economic impact. So in our base case, we are expecting the central government to do three things. One, preponement of spending if need be, because any government spending will be able to provide some economic support, the front loading of spending. We are not really building in any fiscal stimulus in our FY22 forecast for the fiscal situation, because we think it will be very hard looking at the overall consolidated picture for any government to come out with more fiscal stimulus this year. However, if need be, the way you are seeing that there could be some free food ration to the poor in the form of rice and wheat procurement, which could be provided to the lowest income strata. Right now it could be a part of the Gareeb Kalyan Yojana, where you are allocating the amount to distribute free food ration to the poor. What we saw in 2020, that government actually used pandemic to introduce a lot of long-standing reforms like incentive for manufacturing in the form of a production-linked incentive scheme. They announced labor laws. But the key is that whether or not we are going to see progress this year, even during the worst of, during seeing the continuation of the second wave, whether government is going to remain on this medium-term growth path that we keep on seeing more and more work being done on the structural reform bit, so that once we are out of the pandemic, at least India is able to move on the right path and there are no questions raised whether India's potential growth is going to slow from 6% to say somewhere around 5-5.5%. So I guess the focus of the government on structural reforms is something which I will be definitely watching out, but I'm not expecting any outright fiscal stimulus this year. So RBI, as we have been seeing, has been facing a trilemma of managing the bond yields, managing or ensuring currency remains range-bound, and lastly, keeping inflation under check. So of the three objectives at this point in time in 2021, I say the first priority, even at the time of a second wave, seems to be maintaining cost of capital. In fact, notwithstanding the rising inflationary pressures, our view is that the RBI is likely to keep the repo rate on hold in FY22 to ensure least disruption to the government's borrowing program and support economic recovery at a time when COVID-19 cases are clearly rising. So that is largely, in our sense, what is the priority looking at the current economic scenario.
Tanvi, thank you so much for your insights and your comments. And we know it's going to be a tough year, but hopefully down the line, if we are having the same conversation 6 months down the line, I hope it will be a better and rosier conversation with a much better outlook. Thank you so much for speaking to us in this episode of Money Control Magazine. And you please take care.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.